Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whenever you happen to be listening to our podcast and broadcast of Rated LGBT Radio. I am your host, Rob Watson, and we are pleased to be with you today. I just do want to remind you, if you like the show, we are available on all smartphones under the podcast app. You just click on that app and do a search for Rated LGBT Radio and subscribe. And we would appreciate it if you pass the word on that and have people subscribe even more. We are fortunate to be a 5-star rated show, and we're honored by that. So we want to spread the good news around, and we are your show of the latest breaking news, particularly news that affects the LGBTQ community. And great thanks to my producer slash co-host slash expert journalist Brody Levesque for his finger on the pulse of that kind of information, and we are very pleased to bring that to you. We are in a mode with the Trump administration where they are picking off at-risk parties across the nation and across our sphere to go after. First, they came after the transgender community by throwing them out of the military and attacking them in schools, and now filing amicus briefs to the Supreme Court trying to deny them legal protection. And in those legal briefs, they are expanding their attack on groups by also putting in briefs that attack the protections that would otherwise protect LGBT or gay and lesbian and bisexual parts of the community, including as well as the transgender community. So there, the space there has been broadened. Obviously, the Trump administration has been going after immigrants, asylum seekers, and many other at-risk parties. Well, come today, they have now expanded to yet another group, and this would be children who are born abroad, and denying those children who would otherwise qualify for American citizen status to not be made American citizens. And we're going to find out the details on that and how that affects some LGBT families as well as others, but greatly affects military families who are stationed abroad, really putting their lives and their welfare on the line for the good of the country and robbing them of this otherwise assumed right for the kids, the children that they have born to them in those circumstances. Our guest today is going to be Peter Perkowski. He is the legal director of the Modern Military Association of America. He will put us even further in the know in terms of what the situation is and what we can do about that. But first, I'm going to bring on my beloved co-host and esteemed journalist, Brody Levesque. Brody, good afternoon, good evening, good day. How are you?
I'm fine, still suffering from a little bit of a head cold. So if our listeners think I sound funny, there is a reason. Before we bring Peter on, I wanted to bring attention and note to a subject that has been contentious for many, many years in the scientific community. And it has to do with the actual genesis of sexual orientation. And released today were two studies that in the analysis of these studies essentially said that the genetics does play a role and is responsible for perhaps a third of the influence on whether or not someone has same-sex attractions or same-sex sex, if it were. Pardon me. So this is kind of groundbreaking, and the study was released, like I said, today. The New York Times, Washington Post, and everybody else is taking a look at it. ScienceMagazine.org has the entire study, so you guys can, listening to my voice, can shoot over there and take a look at it. One of the things that
I'm
going to
put this, Brody. Sorry, I was just going to put this in other terms. So since you and I sometimes speak slightly different languages, I'm going to say it this way: Lady Gaga was right. We were born this way. Period.
Yeah, okay.
And to clarify, one thing that has always been part of that discussion, it's been fairly understood that sexual orientation is a biological instinct that we are literally, to, again, Lady Gaga's point of view, we are born with. This study clarifies it even more specifically, not just to a biological origin, but actually a genetics origin, which puts it even more hardwired in our written makeup, in our biology when we are born. So anyway, what was your perspective there, Brody, that you were bringing to this?
Well, across human societies and in both sexes, and this is of course documented by the study, 2 to 10% of individuals in case studies report engaging in sex with same-sex partners, either exclusively or in addition to their opposite sex partners, bisexuality being factored into it. But these studies go into figuring out what the basis for all of this is. And, for a long time, scientists have poo-pooed and discounted the gay gene. Everybody's been looking for it. They can't find it. What this study does is it says, well, not so fast. Okay. There seems to be specific genes involved, okay, maybe not just necessarily one, but several, that have been underpowered, and they do, in fact, have a direct effect on these rather complex human sexuality traits. So these new data sets are going to be able to, as Lady Gaga put it, put out there that, we are actually born this way, which I think, is a significant advancement, at least in terms of pushing forward, even more grounding and basis for equality rights for the LGBTQI community.
Absolutely. And I want to point out, for those who want to confuse the issue by the accurate statement you just made, that there isn't a single gay gene, there is also not a single race gene. So the things that create a person's racial profile in their DNA is not due to a single gene either. But and so this puts it very closely into that categorization. So it's puts us one step closer into science solidification. Not that that should even matter. I mean, but it is good to recognize.
I think it really is, and it's kind of important. One, while we're waiting for Peter, I'd like to throw out a couple of other things here, real quick.
By the way, Peter is on the line, Brody.
Well, if Peter's on the line, then.
Yeah.
Let's not keep Peter waiting, because he's an extremely busy legal director, and I don't like to keep attorneys, especially what they bill and do in billable hours, waiting. So, yeah, please bring Peter on. We'll cover this afterwards.
Okay. So, Peter, with that very glorious introduction, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure.
By the way, so, like Brody, I also have a cold, so hopefully that won't interfere with my ability to communicate. But I might sound strange.
You guys make me feel very, very healthy right now. I feel great. So, Peter, not feeling great are families that are now subject to this new dictate from the Trump administration, which in its communication has been a bit confused. Can you let us know what happened, what came out, and how that has been amended in the meantime?
Yeah, I mean, I must say that the manner in which this was announced was botched, and the Trump administration ought to be embarrassed. It was irresponsible at best. Let me kind of back up and give an overview of what the new policy, which is from USCIS, the United States Citizens and Immigration Service, says. So there are two ways that you can become a citizen of the United States. You can, what the first is called birthright citizenship. You are a citizen at birth. And the second way is through naturalization. You are not a citizen at birth, but you are granted citizenship through naturalization. So a birthright citizenship is generally if you're born within the borders of the United States and some of the outlying territories, you qualify. And in some instances, or I think maybe all instances, if you are born to citizen parents, regardless of where you're born, you have birthright citizenship. So this policy did not have anything to do with birthright citizenship. It had to do with naturalization. Now, it used to be that there was a way to qualify for naturalization of citizenship automatically. And that is what was eliminated in this this policy change that affects certain groups of people, mainly immigrants, as you mentioned at the top of the show. This policy really is targeting immigrants like so many other policies from the Trump administration. So that's kind of what we're looking at. And I can go into detail about how that affects service members and the LGBTQ community in general.
I think that in looking at this, and the acting director of USCIS, the former Attorney General of Commonwealth of Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli, has had a long track record of anti-immigrant animus. This was seen in Virginia about 10 years ago when there were some problems with the immigrant community in Prince William County. And some of the legal opinions that he drafted to guide Commonwealth prosecutors and even law enforcement officials in Northern Virginia, particularly Prince William, more or less gave license to be quite frankly discriminatory and, you know, bend over backwards to help ICE out in any way they could. Now he's sitting in this position where he's at, more or less aiding and abetting, in my opinion, and again, this is my opinion, Stephen Miller, the special counsel to the president, who's been regarded as the one spearheading these efforts. The thing that was of concern here, Pete, and this is what most people have been looking at, obviously, one, the convoluted way in which they rolled the policy out, but two, because it appears to put groups that weren't previously at risk of denial of entry to the United States or denial of citizenship, and in some cases almost putting them in a stateless capacity because they won't have citizenship of even in the country where they were born. And I think in regards not just to our, you know, the folks that serve in the United States Armed Forces, but our LGBTQI community, you know, we've already seen instances as documented by lawsuits that are being handled by your colleagues at the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the American Civil Liberties Union, and Immigration Equality, of parents who have either adopted or they've had a surrogate birth of a child. One parent is an American citizen, the other one may or may not be, but Cuccinelli and now the administration is using this rather tenuous interpretation of, you know, current existing immigration law and the act specifically covers this, and it seems like they're just upping the ante now. And it also occurs to me that this goes hand in hand with what we're seeing now with denial of some of the veterans of the U.S. Armed Forces in terms of, getting their citizenship even after they, fought for the country, or members of their immediate family whom they may have a green card, they may have served in the armed forces, but now their families, particularly minor children, are going to be left stateless. Is that an accurate synopsis?
Yeah, buddy, I think you teed on every bit. It's really a dog's breakfast here. So, yes, there are issues with the recognition of families in our community because they are non-traditional families. But those same problems are going to feed into this new policy and create additional barriers. So I'm not prepared to say, I'm not an immigration lawyer, I'm not a family lawyer. So I'm not prepared to say that this policy change will permanently exclude certain children from citizenship. It will certainly make it harder because, like I said, it has eliminated automatic naturalization for certain children, but you still have the possibility of a naturalization application just like anybody else. So what it does is create additional burdens and barriers. And for service members, we don't think that's fair. And in the same way that you highlighted the service members who are being deported after serving the country, their families being mistreated, families are separated involuntarily, this creates an additional burden when we think those families have enough burdens by being, stationed outside the United States and in some cases separated from their families and also, focused on doing their jobs and protecting the United States. So, filing paperwork for their children to be naturalized citizens really isn't something that we view as a good use of time, certainly. But like I said, so I think this policy, again, targets immigrants because it's when one of the parents isn't a citizen, or at least one of them isn't a citizen, that it comes into play. But I think the LGBTQ community is kind of collateral damage here. You highlighted it in your statement that about how the alternative reproductive technologies assist couples in our community in having children. And it's those situations where automatic birthright citizenship may not come into play if you are outside the United States. So a policy targeting immigrants is kind of sweeping or encompassing the LGBTQ community in its grasp.
Peter, could you give some hypothetical examples where this comes into play just for, and I'm asking for myself, but our listeners who are hearing, okay, this isn't applying to American citizens, but it's applying to others abroad, et cetera. But who exactly, in a hypothetical situation, for example, somebody who's on a visa who is enlisted in the armed forces, what is, who exactly is this affecting where today they would have been, their child would have been a naturalized citizen, but now under this new ruling, they're not. Can you give us a little vision as to who these people are that would be affected?
All right, I'll do my best. Like I said, I'm not an immigration lawyer, so I want to make clear that this is not, I'm not giving legal advice or even, entirely certain of my solid footing here, but Two basic things. First is that this policy applies to children born outside the United States only. And and it doesn't apply to couples where both parents are citizens. Because that, like I said, that children born to those couples will have birthright citizenship. So in many cases, you will have a citizen parent and the spouse will be either a lawful permanent resident with a green card or perhaps a DACA recipient or even a foreign national who has a child with that U.S. citizen born outside the United States. So depending on certain circumstances, which are set forth in the statute, that child could be entitled to automatic naturalization based on some residency requirements. And that's what the policy did this week. It changed those residency requirements in ways that I'm not prepared to explain. But the other situations where it might come up are adoption. So if parents are adopting children born outside of the United States, again, the statute as it used to be interpreted could give those children automatic naturalization citizenship, and now it will not. The situations I mentioned with assisted reproductive technology, so you mentioned surrogacy, egg donation, sperm donation, depending on how the law interprets the parentage of the children produced with those reproductive technologies, that it may be that the child is not recognized as being a citizen. And I think, Brody, you mentioned it. We're fighting those battles currently. So now we're fighting an additional battle on top of that, which is that even when the parentage is recognized, that child may not be granted the citizenship in the same way that they would be if they were born to U.S. citizen parents. So I think those are broadly, by broad strokes, what we're talking about here, without going into too much annoying legal detail.
Well, let me
Excuse
me. Let me read you a statement that I was sent about 20 minutes ago by the acting director of USCIS. This is Ken Cuccinelli in a statement in an email. By law, most babies born to U.S. citizens overseas become U.S. citizens at birth. The new policy does not affect anyone who is born a U.S. citizen, period. This does not impact birthright citizenship. What this policy does is it's a policy update, okay? It does not deny citizenship to the children of U.S. government employees or members of the military born abroad. Now,
that's an accurate statement. I mean, true. What he's not saying is what it is, the kind of burdens and barriers it places on families who no longer can avail themselves of the avenues for citizenship that are being taken away, right? So now you have to submit an application. Depending on the factual circumstances of the family, you either have to have a child inside the United States under a green card visa or some sort of visa, or you have to have the child outside the United States for the processing of the naturalization application. Naturalization applications are not easy. You have to hire a lawyer, or it's recommended that you hire a lawyer because you don't want to screw it up. And that it takes some time. And like you said, there may be a period where that child is a stateless child and there's no citizenship recognized. And, you know, in the military at least, and also DOD civilian employees can be moved around at will. And that could cause additional problems with that child not being having a passport or being allowed entry into certain cases, into certain countries. So these are all of the additional barriers and burdens that are being placed on families now that they have to jump through multiple hoops that are going to take a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of resources, when they really should be just focused on taking care of their families and protecting the country.
Agreed.
Peter,
agreed.
Putting a hat on as if you were within the administration and trying to just put some balance in this to portray their point of view, what could the possible benefit to American interests be to enact this change? What is their potential upside in making this happen?
I mean, I wish I try my best not to get in a mindset of bigots and bad actors because it rapidly drives me crazy. But if I had to guess, I would say that this policy change, would subject all foreign-born children who are not, who do not have the breath pipe, the chef as we've discussed, will subject them to processing that allows the government to basically figure out their bona fides, right? So, you know, normally if you're talking about infants, there's not going to be any infant that is a danger to the United States, right? But if this policy covers people up to the age of 18, so I suppose the government could argue, and I hate making arguments for the government, but they could argue that there may be children who have been radicalized, or at least allow the government the opportunity to look into their background before granting them naturalization, citizenship by naturalization. That's my guess. That's my guess.
Let me throw this out there. Cuccinelli also said that this new policy aligns USCIS process with the Department of State's procedure, which has already become problematic, as we've seen in about five or six adoption cases with same-sex couples. Patricia Kimmy, who is a colleague at military.com, in her piece wrote this, and I think this is to your point. From 1999 to 2010, roughly 80,000 non-citizens were members of the U.S. Armed Forces. About 5,000 legal permanent residents join the armed services each year. It remains unclear how many children will be affected by the new rules, which go into effect October 29th, but it will have an impact on the families of U.S. troops who are not U.S. citizens and are not married to a U.S. citizen, as well as any children adopted by service members stationed overseas. And even though Cuccinelli in his own way is saying, well, it's not going to affect that, it automatically gums the system up for adoption because the birthright doesn't convey in that case.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that quote is correct as well. I mean, those are the two perspectives. Ken Cuccinelli telling us, you know, everything's okay. We're not taking away citizenship from everybody or from anybody, which is not entirely true, by the way. The naturalization citizenship can be denied on various grounds. So, you know, taking away an automatic naturalization could have negative consequences for a certain subset of Africans, right? And the quote you just read is true as well. I mean, that's exactly what we're afraid is going to happen. In situations where the birth is not from your citizen parents or is it a foreign state adoption, that there could be problems.
So in terms of LGBTQ families and families that might go to South American countries or African countries and adopt children, and given the kind of agenda that has cropped up in the Trump administration, this could be used as a weapon against those families, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is the intersection of LGBTQ and immigration status. Obviously, if two U.S. citizens went to South America and adopted a child, I believe, although again, disclaimer, I believe that child would be entitled to automatic naturalization. If a U.S. citizen and a, say, a lawful permanent resident couple who were spouses traveled to outside the United States to adopt, I don't know if automatically they would be. Actually, no, I think that's the automatic has been taken away. So they would have to apply for naturalization of that child, if I remember right, of what I read on the policy. So, yeah. But broadly speaking, those are the problems that we could anticipate.
Right. So
weaponization,
again, a hypothetical, if a serviceman was stationed in Germany and met and married a woman there and they had a child, would that be a situation that would come under this?
I believe so, because my understanding is that birthright citizenship would not apply because the child was not born in the United States, and although the child was born to a U.S. citizen parent, one of them anyway, the second parent, I believe, has to have been in the United States for some period of time, I think it's a year, before the birth of the child for birthright citizenship to attach. So again, I'm not an immigration lawyer, so don't quote me on that, but these are the where the rubber meets the road, right? You have to slice and dice, you have to figure out the factual circumstances, and then figure out where you fall. But the issue is the immigrant communities and the LGBTQ communities, because of our heavy use of assisted reproduction and adoption in order to form families, these are the communities that are going to be affected most.
One of the things brought up when we were talking about it, Peter, was it's to conform the definition of residence in the Immigration and Nationality Act. Now, we've already seen instances and problems with interpretation of that by Bureau of Consular Affairs at the State Department in the aforementioned cases that you and I just discussed, where the citizenship of the children is in fact being challenged. This then would, as Rob was asking, this then would cause a problem because one of the parents is not a U.S. citizen, and under the residency requirements of the Immigration and Nationality Act, as now defined by both the Bureau of Consular Affairs at State and also now USCIS, this is where we come into problematic areas, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. That's a good summary.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, no, I was just, Peter, you expounded on the hardship that this would cause the individual families who, before this was a smooth process, and now this would become extremely difficult and entail hiring a lawyer and the uncertainty and everything that is involved. Just from a practical point of view, all that additional administration has got to be a cost to the government as well on the other side, correct? I mean, this policy change could only be furthering bureaucratic cost, hardship, complications, et cetera. I can't see this making a more efficient government. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, looking at it from the other side of the coin, right? Every application that wouldn't have had to be reviewed before now has to be reviewed by somebody. But I think really that's not a defect. It's the design of this policy, and they really want to scrutinize non-foreign-born people. But they being the government, say that this policy will affect only about 100 people. I think I saw that quote somewhere. And I don't, you know, I'm not one who automatically believes everything government says. So I'm automatically skeptical. But I also don't know whether this is referring only to service members in that number or also DOD civilians, State Department civilians, and whether they're only referring to naturalized citizens or parents or green card holder parents or DACA recipient parents. There's a lot of categories that come into play here, and I don't know how they came up with that number. So they're trying to minimize the burden both to in terms of the number of the size of the population that's being affected and also the consequent, you know, burden on the government of processing these applications. So they're automatically on defense in that regard, but you're right that, you know, they are creating additional work for themselves, and we've seen that the government already is not operating very efficiently, and this just adds to the pile further.
Yeah, go ahead, Brody.
No, it's all right. Go ahead, Rob. Finish your thought, please.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering if because there's some of the things historically that have happened You know, in, for example, in the Vietnam War, was servicemen over in Vietnam that had children out of wedlock with women there, and those kids have had some claim to American citizenship. Number one is, I'm assuming that any child born that way in any other location by a serviceman now would fall under this. But also, is there any retro to this, that people who got their citizenship that way might now fall under question?
No, not specifically. I mean, the issue there with regard to male service members fathering children in foreign countries has been, or at least the justification has been, did that person really produce this child? So obviously when the child comes out of the mother, you know who the mother is. You don't necessarily know who the father is. So that those were the objections being made back then. This new policy, it's going to into effect October 29, I think it is, and it specifically states that applications received before October 29 will be treated under the old policy. So it won't have a retro effect, but it may apply to children born before October 29 who didn't get applications on file by then.
I actually have text of the policy, which it basically summarizes: U.S. citizen parents who are residing outside the U.S. with children who are not U.S. citizens should apply for U.S. citizenship on behalf of their children under the policy. The new policy must complete this process before the child's 18th birthday. There is a grandfathering prior to October 29. The bullet points on who are affected: children who live with their U.S. parents abroad but who do not acquire citizenship at birth, including infants and children adopted overseas. I'm going to get back to that one in a minute. Children born of non-U.S. citizens who are adopted by U.S. citizens. I'll go back to that in a second. Those whose parents become U.S. citizens after the child's birth, and U.S. citizens who did not meet the residence or physical presence rules under the Immigration and Nationality Act, needed to transmit birthright citizenship. Let me go back to the other two points, and this is specific to you, Peter. Okay, children born of non-U.S. citizens who are adopted by U.S. citizens. All right, obviously, we have lesbian and gay and even trans service members in service right now, some mm-hmm. of whom are married or about to get married. Okay, this is going to directly impact them. Would you not agree with me that it now becomes a double burden because of the fact, and we've seen this already, with civilians even trying to come across the border from my homeland of Canada, okay, into the United States for citizenship or their children. These are children born of non-citizens, but through either surrogacy or other means. Okay, this is now a legitimately married gay service couple or mixed marriage trans couple or lesbian couple. They go out, they have a surrogate, or they just outright adopt a kid. Okay, the first issue becomes, as you mentioned, is this really your kid? And then, of course, we're still seeing incidences of prejudicial treatment by Bureau of Consular Affairs against same-sex couples to begin with. Then you add this right on top of it as another strata or a layer. And it just seems to me that this is going to open up one legal lawsuit right after the other. Or am I not reading this right?
I mean, I always see the worst, especially with this administration. So, yes, I see all of those problems too. Like, for example, say a couple living in the United States, same-sex couple, citizen, and a non-citizen, who say that non-citizen hasn't lived in the United States for very long. If they leave and they adopt a child, and you cannot bring that child in the United States now because it's not a citizen, doesn't have a passport. You need to get a visa for that child in order to bring them back. So how long are you going to be stuck in that foreign country waiting for a visa to be granted so that you can come back and start caring for your child, right? And so this is just another way that where the anti-LGBTQ bias that currently exists in our government can be
can be manifested. We've seen it already. You've highlighted it a couple of times, and this is just going to be another way for that to come out.
Well, Rob?
Yeah. No, I guess I'm stuck on the motivation behind this. I mean, it's to what we've discussed, this puts additional constraints on the whole immigration evaluation system across the board, which from all accounts is overburdened at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a situation where families are being held and they're now trying to apply that they can be held indefinitely. I would think that any kind of efficient system would be trying at the very least, no matter what their point of view was, to make things more efficient and more streamlined to aid in processing people and keeping them from losing their freedom altogether. And this seems to be just another complication, not only rolled out poorly, so even understanding exactly what the ramifications are, but even once you get it boiled down, has nothing to do with efficiency or protection, really. I mean, it just boggles my mind. And I don't know, Peter, if there was a question there, but I definitely would want your feedback on that.
Yeah, I mean, I stopped allowing my mind to be boggled, I guess. I mean, I guess the question is what the motivation is. I honestly have no idea other than the continued anti-immigrant bias that has been flowing out of this administration since day one. Actually, before day one, it's more about the campaign. And that's the only thing I can think of. I would bet dollars to donuts, but they didn't anticipate that this would sweep up LGBTQ families. If they realize that now, they're probably a little gleeful about it, I imagine, because I ascribe, very negative attitudes about LGBTQ families to them. But to me, this was purely anti-immigrant, and this was just another way where they could change a policy and claim to be fixing it, as they did, saying they're harmonizing laws and bringing them all into so they operate the same, and at the same time harm people while they're doing it. And I don't really believe they care about the burdens on the USCIS, because to them, the primary burden will be on immigrant families or families that include non-U.S. members. And, they'll get to those applications whenever they get to them, and it'll not be anybody's problem except the human beings who are affected by it.
Right. Some of celebrities, Madonna and Angelina Jolie, et cetera, have highlighted the plights of orphanages in Africa, and I don't know that they've targeted South America, but certainly there are those. Is this also maybe a mean-spirited way of making those kind of adoptions more difficult?
I don't know, because I did not read carefully the part of the policy that applies to adoption. If it does, it's just, again, kind of wrapped up in the administration's targeting of Black and brown and people of color generally. So, again, they probably see it as a feature, not a bug.
I see a practical problem with this too, Peter. Let's consider the aspects, if we're looking at it from the position of the Pentagon and the military, which is that's your lane and your where you operate. You have a service member. We'll make the service member gay. He and his husband are with the United States, Air Force Band of Europe. they are given permanent change orders to, say, go from Ramstein Air Force Base, Germany, to Travis Air Force Base, California, to the Band of the West, okay? As you know, military, you know, permanent change of station orders are pretty well locked in. You have, you know, you have a little bit of latitude for leave, and then that's it. You know, household goods and everything else, tightly shipped schedules, stuff like this. They go into the consulate in Frankfurt because they need some paperwork for one of the kids, and suddenly, boom, now they're hit with this policy, and it's, well, we can't issue you a visa until, okay? In the meantime, both parents are being transferred, all right? There's no one to take care of the kid in Germany, okay? What would you do is suddenly going to be, you know, the scenario. How likely is this going to be?
Well, it depends on who you believe. In their mind, this is going to affect 100 people at most, and I'm sure they'll argue that, you know, that family should have gotten an application on file after the child was born or adopted. They shouldn't have waited, yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, this just gets back to what I said before, which is that the burdens are falling on the families when we're supposed to be taking care of the families so that they can do their jobs, protect us, right? So there's really no recognition that we're making it harder. We're going to create these situations. So I don't know the likelihood of that, Brody, but I do know there exists a possibility that it will come to pass, right? I can't eliminate that as a possibility. So let's acknowledge it. But there is no acknowledgement from it. Ken Cuccitelli's statement is like, oh, we're not really taking away citizenship from anybody. Yeah, that's true, bro, but you are really making it harder and creating barriers and burdens when none previously existed, and those barriers and burdens are falling on the people where they should not be placed, which is the service members and the families, the people serving our country, and that's wrong, period, full stop.
Oh, yeah. I should note for our listeners that also includes government employees who are civilian and work for the Department of Defense or anybody in that vein. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, Peter, you since this broke and you made the comment earlier that this has gotten a lot more attention than you think the Trump administration had thought it was going to, and I'm sure you've been busy today with other people interviewing you and asking you a bunch of questions in the media. What has been the media reaction and to your knowledge, the public reaction to this so far?
Well, I can tell you the reaction from our membership, which is a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, a lot of inquiries about how does this affect me? Is it going to affect me? What do I need to do about it? So, you know, that was yesterday. And really, I don't know the answer. In most cases, if you're talking about two citizens, two spouses who are citizens, it's not going to affect you at all. It's going to depend on the immigration status of one of the spouses, you know, their residency as newly defined in this policy, and also when the baby is born, right? So, but still, there's always uncertainty and anxiety out there from our members. In terms of the media, I think the media is treating it like they always do with new Trump announcements, which is a lot of hand-waving and attempts to explain, and also a little bit of drama about, oh, Trump's doing bad things to people of color, which is true. And they're having people like me and others on programs to help explain it and to really explain the consequences. I don't think anybody really realized that the LGBTQ intersection came into play until I mentioned it. And because it really was, the focus was on the anti-immigrant nature of the announcement and LGBTQ community being the collateral damage is my point. So
right,
that's how the media is handling it now. I think there is a recognition that, you know, we should be treating service members better. I think there's an agreement, or at least from the people I've heard talking, which is, you know, these are the people putting their lives on the line for our country, and we really owe them more than this.
Yeah, very good. And Peter, one question I'd like to ask our guests often is, because we pummeled you with a lot of questions, what is the question that we should be asking about this that we haven't asked you so far?
Oh, goodness. That's a good question. My question is kind of what's the next step? And I honestly don't know what the answer is. I expect that advocacy groups like Modern Military Association and maybe ACLU and others might be very interested in legal challenges. I don't know how, the merits of those, and I haven't done any analysis at all about it. So I think that's probably the curious question that you're not asking, but, you know, I'm glad you didn't, because I would be completely lost. This is also new and also uncertain and also a gray area that, you know, I think there's going to be a few days while we talk about it and figure out exactly what the effects are going to be and how many people are affected until we figure out where we need to go.
Oh, great. Brody, any final questions?
Actually, yeah, tangential to this, Peter, if you don't mind, I'm sure you saw former Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis's essay that he wrote that was published in the Wall Street Journal. The Palm Center in California released this statement in reaction. Former Defense Secretary Mattis will be remembered not for combating divisiveness, but for sowing it through the policy banning transgender military service that bears his name. Mattis claims his biggest concern about America today is internal divisiveness fueled by emotion and a mutual disdain that jeopardizes our future. Yet Mattis's willingness to divide his own military force by cowing to Trump's call to ban trans troops from service makes this claim the height of hypocrisy. How would you categorize Mattis's essay and looking at it? Do you agree with Mr. Belkin at the Palm Center, or do you have another quick outlook?
I have to confess not to have read Mattis's op-ed yet because of, you know, the hair on fire nature of this recent policy announcement. But knowing what I know about the Palm Center, which is a partner of Modern Military Association, and what I know about Mattis when he was Secretary of Defense, I can't disagree with what Aaron Belkin said. Secretary Mattis had the opportunity to, when he was directed by Trump, to give him advice on the policy of transgender service. And he had the opportunity to say, my opinion is no changes are necessary. My reading of Trump's direction to Secretary Mattis was that he could have done that, and he didn't. He decided instead to follow Trump's lead or instruction and interpret that as meaning he was obligated, which is a fair reading of what Trump said, which is basically nobody, the trans people can't serve. So Secretary Mattis, give me a policy that says that, which is what Mattis did. But if he wanted to stand first principles, he would have said, my opinion is no changes are necessary. And he didn't do that. So I think Aaron Belkin's right.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And thank you, Peter, for all the work that you and Andy do at the Modern Military Association of America. Tell our listeners how they can find you on the web, please.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for having me on, first of all. And thank you for all the attention you're bringing to this and other issues affecting the LGBTQ community and the military community that where that intersects. Modern Military is at LGBTQ Military on Instagram, I think. On Facebook, it's Modern Military, I think. And I'm at Peter Pekowski if you want to follow me. But yes, you can find us at those places. And Twitter, I think, is LGBTQ Military as well.
Great. LGBTQ Military. Excellent. Peter, I want to thank you so much for, to Brody's point, everything you're doing. Thank you for being on the forefront of all of this. especially in these issues. And thank you extremely much for joining us today on this discussion. This will be out there in Podcastville for people to absorb in the weeks to come. Again, for our listeners, on any smartphone, go to your podcast app and do a search of Rated LGBT Radio. You will find us there. Please subscribe if you're not already. Please encourage others to subscribe, and then the episodes will be pushed to your phone as they become available. You can also hear us on the web through our links, and you can hear us live when we broadcast if you so choose to do so. We are also, or I'm also heard on out in Santa Cruz on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 p.m. Eastern time, and you can listen to those shows on www.ksco.com, and there is an archive of those shows as well. They tend to be a little more culturally oriented rather than political, but they still are thought-provoking and hopefully interesting. Brody, any final words from you as we kick off this week?
No, I think that's it. I think that once again, thanks to Peter and the crew at Modern Military and the work that they do. And I think it's very terribly important that our listeners understand that, as Peter put, some policies that may take on appearances of one segment of society, we in the LGBTQI community become collateral damage, and it behooves all of us to pay attention. Rob?
I agree. And thank you, Brody, for everything you do and your expert journalism every single day, as well as all your participation on the show here. Greatly appreciated. And last but not least, I want to thank our listeners. There are hundreds of thousands of you. We really appreciate it, and we're pleased to have you. We will be back here next week, same time, same channel, and we will be bringing you some very hot topic of the week, of the day, and of the year. Again, tell your friends, we're here for you, and we can't wait to speak to you at that point in time.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.